Welcome to the Persuasion Lab podcast. I'm Martin Medeiros, expert negotiator. Unfortunately, the world isn't made to your specifications in all ways at all times, which means you need to be able to communicate your wants and needs so you can get them met. I'm here to teach you the tools and strategies so that you can do exactly that. Stay tuned after the episode for more information about the fully outfitted Digital Persuasion Lab, or head over to thepersuasionlab.com to get started. You can't stand your boss. Now what? On this week in the Persuasion Lab, we're going to talk about how to navigate, persuade, influence your job back to an even keel when you decide you don't like your boss. And on that point, we all know the typical trajectory. You may be in a bad situation professionally, you may be unemployed or underemployed after weeks of looking, in some cases, or months, or maybe even years. You finally get the job. It looks so awesome. Going into jobs, it's rosy. You have a lot of positive, new leaf, all these great thoughts pop in your head. You get there, get the routine down, start working there a few months, and then you decide your boss is a jerk. Your relationship isn't good. Something's going on. It may be something that you do yourself. So how do we get over this? I'm going to go over a little bit of the research and critique the research of Mark Murphy, who's kind of like a leadership author guru. He does a little bit of number grinding, but I'll get into his stuff on what to do. And I'll also talk about what typically we need to see in ourselves, because a lot of clients in the Persuasion Lab talk to me about what their boss is doing and what not doing. And many times I can't get into hard stuff. I think it is mostly an issue of familiarity breeding contempt, and an issue of boredom issue of unmet expectations going into the job, maybe in the interview cycle. So let's get into that. First, if your relationship with your boss is less than optimal, if it is not really going your way, do not avoid it, because things can only get worse. It's better to bring it out on the table and do something about it. If you think, I don't like my boss, this weird thing happened, it was awkward, I'm just gonna keep my eyes down, keep my nose to the grindstone, and hope she or he doesn't notice what's going on. If I just do my job and avoid, that'll be fine. So Mark Murphy's study, which is, you can search it, it's called Optimal Hours with the Boss. And his model is about spending time with the boss and how that benefits. So from Murphy's approach, avoiding the boss is the biggest mistake you can make. And here's what his study said. He found that employees who spend 6 hours a week interacting with the boss, their direct leader, are 29% more inspired, 30% more engaged, 16% more innovative, and 15% more intrinsically motivated than the other group that spends up to an hour with the boss. In other words, you may have to look at the mirror, because if your boss is not inspiring you and you're avoiding him, part of that may be on you. And of course, this doesn't have to do with obvious legal issues, major personality issues, illegal conduct, all that stuff. We're not talking about that. We're talking about nuance here. If it's an HR issue, go to HR. If it's an illegal issue, go to your labor department administration. Or if it's something really bad, then of course, call 911. But at the end of the day, you've got to think about, well, am I avoiding it, and are things just being created in my head because I just don't want to deal with it? And what I'm observing, I don't like. So how do we get out of that? I mean, I've been in this situation where you see your boss making a lot of obvious errors and you kind of do your own thing and hope that you're not collateral damage on their bad decisions. But the first thing you have to do is, and this is something Murphy says, and I was intrigued, so I'll tell you, and I've actually done this, acknowledge and apologize. Acknowledge and apologize. Once we come out with it, just state the obvious, because it's out there. Yeah, hey, this is awkward. This thing happened. We're kind of avoiding each other. And then you apologize. You say, hey, I know I've been distracted by this, and perhaps my performance hasn't been up to snuff. Why this is different, why this gets attention and makes the boss listen, because people who apologize, people who give gratitude, those people have a pretty good sense of self. They have an inner power where they think, hey, what's the worst that can go wrong? So in a fear-based scarcity mindset, you may think this is taking a risk, and it may be, but if you feel confident enough to admit when that you're not perfect, and few of us are, your boss will listen. He'll listen because she will know that you are self-aware, which is a sign of maturity, leadership, and functionality. Now, this doesn't apply if you are a serial apologizer, if you feel like you have to apologize for everything, and that's a totally different issue we're not going to get into. But this is attention getting, because why? What do most people do? They offer excuses. In a business setting, it doesn't matter if it's government, nonprofit, or for-profit, we tend to be defensive, we tend to blame other people, we tend to deny, and every boss has seen this. I have seen this so much, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. True story, you know, an employee always had a defense. Oh, I was late again because X happened, you know, flat tire, this happened, that happened, all stuff. And these things happen. But when they happen a lot, you can, one, call in. Two, if it's transportation, you can have Uber, or there's so many other options now, especially in the city. And we're not talking about a long commute here. Blame others. Or just say, it's fine, it's no biggie, we're cool. Well, no, those things really don't work. So owning what you are, being self-aware, really communicates to your boss. And knowing that apology must be sincere. Now, if you are a newsletter subscriber, we really delve into this idea, quick hits about how to be sincere. In that context, it was about compliments, but sincerity is really important. And by the way, if you're not a subscriber to the newsletter, you are missing out big time. We get a lot of compliments, a lot of people love it, a lot of very quick reads. So why don't you subscribe? You can send an email at info@negotiationstrategist.com or hit the landing page in the notes to this podcast. So the way you are sincere is not embellishing things, not making things seem like it's on them, being passive, aggressive, or things like that. Just be as sincere as you can and truthful. So once you have that apology, then you can get on to like remediation. And this is the phase where Murphy has this little phrase, and I like it, and I'm going to repeat it. Start, stop, and keep doing. So what do you want, boss, for me to start doing, stop doing, or keep doing in order to repair the relationship? And this is important, and Murphy doesn't mention this, and he's a little bit of a humble bragger himself in his writing style. So if you read him, don't be turned off, because he does have some good points. One thing he doesn't talk about much is empathy, or he uses different terms, but I think he gets to the same result. And what that is appreciating your boss's life before you speak. Before I say that, stop, start, keep doing, think about, how does this deal with my boss's world? And think about the whole spectrum of the organization. In different levels of an organization, for the little quippy thing we talk about are grinders, minders, and finders. Okay, grinders, they're people who actually do the work. Lower level, you know, analysts, people who, say if you're in IT, you're crawling around under the desk, getting cables pulled, you're at the help desk, or if you're a landscaper, you're pushing the mower or something like that. So that's what a grinder is. They're people who actually do the work. A minder is the supervisor, the manager, the person who oversees things. The finder, of course, is the sales guy, the guy who gets oxygen into the organization. And let me tell you, salespeople, whoever she is, knows that sales are oxygen to any organization. And that is a skill, that's an interpersonal skill that we really help people develop, hopefully, in this podcast. Those interpersonal sales type things are transcend a lot of different things for grinders and minders, because we all want to be successful or effective, generally speaking. So when you're trying to empathize with your boss, he's more of a minder and less of a grinder. If she's your boss, you're probably grinding or finding. You're probably not a minder, but you could. It goes up. For example, if you're at the supervisor level, manager, director, VP, and even the CEO. So even the CEOs, especially of publicly traded companies, are grinders for, in their capacity, it's a very relationship-based connection, existence with shareholders. And when those CEOs get canned by the board, who may be delegated, and by pressure from shareholders, finding a job at that level is really hard. They may take a year or years to find a new job, because it's highly compensated, it's very specialized. It takes a long time to get hired again at that top level. But long story is that, to some respect, you have to perform at some level on a job, and appreciating that, that's where the empathy comes in. So think before you speak. Think about, what does the manager need to be effective? So if I want to repair this, if I want to stop hating this person, I'm going to have to think where they are, why, or what they're doing. And that'll give you a little perspective and understanding, oh, they're under tremendous pressure from the board to do this. They're under tremendous pressure from the VP to make sure this region is running well. They're under tremendous pressure to make sure that every hamburger is perfect every time, whatever it is. And when you understand that, then you can take it to the next level. And this is kind of a good segue about further thought. So if you think what you're about to say next is going to aggravate the situation, please say nothing. So just circling back, we talked about putting it on the table. We talked about acknowledging and apologizing. We talked about empathy, and it may be time for you to talk. They maybe say something. So if you really want to lash out or say something, but you're not sure, say nothing. Think about it. And that's a perfectly fine response. And you can say, "Thanks for that. I need some time to think about it. Let's chat again later because this is a really important topic. And now that it's on the table, I want to talk about it a little bit more. Let's circle back and take 5 minutes to just close the loop." And that would be perfectly acceptable because in the heat of the moment, we can say things that are not very good. In the heat of the moment, we can say things that can do more damage than good. So it's better to say nothing than to further exacerbate the situation. Finally, know your progress and your contribution to the organization. Document it, make sure your boss knows it, and keep it top of mind. That is influential. If they're doing something that's counterproductive and you have to give them bad news, you don't use words like you, this, other things to put them on the defensive, the boss themselves on the defensive. You basically say, "It seems like we'd be better served if we did this," without being challenging. See, it's a collective word, plural, it's we, it's everybody, rather than you, or putting them personally on the attack and kind of migrate to a better state if they're making serial mistakes. Or, "It seems like you're saying that you want what's best for the company, and it seems like it would follow that this." So make a little logical syllogism is my point. And that's essentially how to repair or at least move this feeling of, "I hate my boss, it's out of control, I have to work here sometimes, or it's going to be hard for me to find another job. What can you do?" And of course, at the end of the day, if you're so afraid of putting this on the table that you think, "Oh, if I just avoid it, it'll be better," and if it's going to trigger a termination, breaking news. If your relationship was that fragile, it probably was not going to last long. And if your boss is that mercurial, you probably don't want to be working for that type of mental, that quick knee-jerk stuff. That's a very stressful situation to be in. Again, even in people's, when they're at their worst, when your boss is at her worst. Think about, all right, how do I empathize? How do I acknowledge? How do I apologize? How do I, if something good is happening, how do I give a genuine compliment? Again, newsletter plug there. These are things that we really need to understand to persuade, influence, and negotiate with our bosses when we can't stand them, but at least in the short term, you don't have a lot of options. Again, this is important. I want to recap. Number one, don't avoid the tension between you and your boss. Second, Mark Murphy tells us to acknowledge and apologize and be sincere. Third, empathize with the boss. Fourth, think of Murphy's idea of start, stop, and keep doing. What do you want me to start? What do you want me to stop? What do you want me to keep doing in order to repair the relationship? And five, monitor your contributions, report it, and keep it at hand because no boss who's half sane will think about having a bad relationship or making a person want to leave if they are contributing to the goals of the organization. So that's what to do when your boss is driving you crazy. Thanks for joining me in the Persuasion Lab. This is Martin Medeiros. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. If you haven't yet, please hit subscribe and leave a review and a rating so other folks can find the podcast. And, of course, the fully outfitted Digital Persuasion Lab is open and ready for all your negotiation experiments. If you head over to thepersuasionlab.com, you'll find tools like strategic plan assessments, deal point checklists, operational considerations, scripts for specific types of negotiations, and access to exclusive personal consultations. The tools and databases are updated monthly, if not weekly, so there's always something new to learn and try. Remember, we communicate our needs to the world using persuasion, influence, and negotiation, and how effective we are at using those techniques determines if, in fact, our needs are met. This is Martin Medeiros in the Persuasion Lab. Thank you for joining us.